And welcome to Keep It Creepy. We're back for episode 2. I am Ryan.
Oh, that was a cue for me to talk. Yeah, that was a cue. I'm not good at cues yet, so this is Charlotte.
We should get like one of those like live taped television shows with the like clap now signs.
Pal, I'm telling you, if you want to hold up cue cards for me to make this go more efficiently, by all means.
Anyway, we're back. Keep It Creepy, episode 2. We're actually going to get into specific movies from now on, aside from the intro episode where we just kind of went into our backgrounds a little bit. From here on out, we're taking down a movie at a time, and to kick things off, I couldn't think of a better movie to start this whole thing off with than The Exorcist. So, I guess the best way to start this is to talk about our own personal experiences with The Exorcist, although we kind of dipped our toes into that in the first episode a little bit. We're both kind of late to the game on The Exorcist.
We were, yeah. I mean, I didn't watch The Exorcist until, I'm going to say I was probably at least 20.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, it was one of those movies I always kind of knew, and it kind of, like, it seeped itself into pop culture to an extent that, like, I knew a lot of scenes that were coming.
Well, yeah, I mean, The Exorcist is not to be ignored. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of, I mean, I can't say listeners, I assume you wouldn't be a listener if you didn't like horror.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are plenty of people out there who aren't horror fans at all who are still quite familiar with The Exorcist to an extent. I mean, it's an iconic movie regardless.
Mm. I mean, everybody knows the head spin scene.
Everybody knows the head spin vomiting nonsense.
Yeah, the vomit, absolutely. Just the scene that introduces Father Marin, just that priest introduction scene somehow has seeped itself in.
Is there anyone on Earth who doesn't, well, yeah, that's a bold statement, but is there anyone who doesn't know the power of Christ compels you?
Exactly,
I mean,
right?
My God.
Yeah, like, it is a very iconic movie. So while we were both late to watching it, we've known it, I would say, since the age of maybe even, like, I'm going to say 7 or 8, something like that.
Oh, definitely, definitely. But, like, I'm not sad that I was late to watch it. I feel like I wouldn't have appreciated that one.
No, me
either.
Like,
when I started watching horror movies at, like, 14, I don't feel that I would have appreciated The Exorcist the way I do now.
Yeah, no, I agree with that because, well, I think we can both agree that, given our ages, when we first started getting into horror in our mid to late teens, in the 2000s, it was, how much can you cut up a human body on screen? Like, you know, we need some new metal playing. We need some, like, some industrial metal type of music.
If I wasn't listening to Linkin Park, I wasn't listening to anything.
Exactly, right? And every horror movie, well, not every, but 99% of the horror movies that came out at that time were industrial metal and as many cut up gory body parts as possible.
Absolutely. So, I think you're just making up statistics as you go along.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't mean to call you out on that, but
You know what? I'm not using any actual surveys here, but if my number of 99% is off at all, I'll be shocked.
We should put a little disclaimer at the beginning of every episode saying, please do not cite our statistics.
No,
we did not actually poll anybody.
No.
Or research. Well, I mean, I can't say we didn't research. We certainly didn't to that extent. Anyway.
No. So, The Exorcist. Let's dip into the history a little bit.
Also, I want to apologize. If you can hear me over here like a mouth breather, my allergies are really acting up. It's bad.
There are certain variables that may play into this episode.
Well, for starters, Bonna has been, she's not happy about this. It's an ordeal for her to have to be quiet.
Yeah.
As she's snoring directly under the table again, so expect a bit of that. And additionally, I'm over here being a mouth breather because my nose is just allergy central.
And on top of that,
wait, there's more. There's beans boiling on the stove because I'm making vegan baked beans because that's something I like to do in my free time.
You just reminded me of something with that wait, there's more bit.
Yes.
You know, the first time that I was even vaguely aware of references to The Exorcist was definitely Scary Movie.
That's awful.
Scary Movie's not that bad.
I don't think I've ever, I think I might have seen it. I don't really have much of an experience with the Scary Movie franchise.
The first couple, get tainted because of how poor the later ones and every other, like...
I just remember them being a lot of really bad, dirty jokes that weren't even, like, good dirty jokes, like, the way, like... I can't even think of a good dirty joke, but, like, you know what I'm saying? I don't know.
The first couple are not bad. It's just that when you think of the Scary Movie franchise, you think of everything else, like Disaster Movie and
Okay, but I remember seeing one that literally had a Brokeback Mountain mockery, and that, how is that even a scary movie?
That's the point where it really took the downturn.
Oh, that's the tipping off point.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't know if that was 3 or 4 or whatever it was.
Regardless.
But yeah, no. First two, I'll stand behind.
So I feel like we're not doing justice to The Exorcist right now, having spent this much time talking about a scary movie in the same episode. I think we ought to go back.
Okay, so The Exorcist was released on December 26th, 1973. I think it's really cool that it came out on Boxing Day. I didn't realize
that. That's amazing, for starters.
Like, that would have been the best Christmas gift ever.
I can't imagine how delightful to see how far, like, for when we lived in a city and we used to actually go to movies on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
What better movie, honestly? I mean, we would always... I'm not saying we settled. I mean, we've seen The Hobbit, and it was pretty good, but...
Well, yeah.
I mean, we never got to see classic horror.
We never got to see horror at all. It's not a time of release for horror movies.
It's not, but it should be.
Unless it's like Krampus
Let's
or something.
Let's bring that back. I want more of that.
Yeah. There's another Christmas one coming out this year. They're remaking Black Christmas once again.
Again. I haven't seen any of them yet. So anyway.
I saw the first remake. I've never seen the original. That's something we should cover as a Christmas episode.
Fair enough.
So 1973, it's based on the 1971 novel by William Peter Blatty.
I started to read.
I also started as soon as, like, in the preparation of this episode, I started it, and I got sidetracked by comics.
I didn't even know you started it in preparation for this episode, but I started it, oh my gosh, a couple of years ago, I think. And, I mean, it's no offense to his writing. It's certainly not his fault. I didn't continue to read it. I went through a bit of a dry spell reading novels, and I think that was just above what my IQ was at the time. Again, it's just self-deprecating. I really just wasn't in the mood to read.
Well, it's a horror novel, but Blatty was never a horror writer.
Well, I guess that's it, right?
It's what's interesting. He got... He found out about this 1949 exorcism case. The names that go around, although there's no official, like, the guy who was involved in the exorcism, the guy who was supposedly possessed, he never revealed his name. He doesn't want anything to do with this stuff.
Sure.
The names that they say, Roland Doe or Robbie Mannheim.
Okay, well, like, to be fair, if you found out you were possessed by the devil, would you want to bring it to work with you?
When you're the basis of the Exorcist.
I mean, my God, do you blame the guy?
No,
I mean, I want to go into work every day and just have people look at me and think, you're what The Exorcist was written about?
Yeah.
That whole head spinning vomit. No, like, I don't want that. I don't want that association in my professional career.
You'd leave your family behind, leave your town, change your name.
Yeah, especially living in a small town. Imagine.
I will note here, a lot of the research and information that I got from for this episode, a lot of it I took from other podcasts, which... I mean, they do their research. I kind of pulled from different pools.
I think that's fair, considering 90% of what you do in your life is listening to podcasts.
So
it's a personality trait at this point.
I will give credit where credit is due. Inside the Exorcist is a miniseries made by Wondery. I listened to that whole thing. I took notes where I thought notes should be taken. And The Wizard and the Bruiser, as always, they did their episode on the Exorcist, and I took a lot of notes from there. I did my own research aside from that, and so on. So, just given the credit in case I accidentally rip anybody off.
With that in mind,
yeah.
I guess you can all pretty much guess what I did to prepare for this episode, which was watch the movie a couple of weeks ago.
Well,
and buy Ryan a blind bag keychain that happened to have Regan in it.
Every successful podcast has two types of hosts. The one who does all the research and the one who makes the funny jokes.
It's bold that you think I'm funny. That's a claim. You shouldn't have made that claim in the second episode. I feel like that's a lot to live up to.
Yeah.
all three people who will ever listen to this are now going to have expectations, Ryan.
I'm sorry. Well, no, because they know it's Jedi Dropout Productions. There's no expectations.
If they've gotten this far, I assume they left their expectations
at
the
door. If you came into this with expectations, be prepared to be so disappointed.
You're in the wrong place, sir.
So...
Are you lost?
So, William Peter Blatty writes this novel.
A fella.
He is the guy who hunted down the director personally because he happened to be present for a meeting between this director and, I forget the famous screenwriter, and he told this, like, Hollywood director, that this kid who just came out of film school told this Hollywood director to his face, your script is shit. It is garbage.
I mean, I bet he wasn't a kid if he had just come out of film school. Really bold words for, like, you're not even 30.
In comparison. Relatively.
Yeah, I get it, yeah.
Yeah, and I believe the actual term he used was this script is donkey dick.
Wow.
Yeah, mature, right?
That's great.
Which, bold, considering he didn't have a job. Anyway, that is directly...
I don't know, man. I guess if you don't have a job, you have nothing to lose.
Yeah, fair enough, right? So, apparently, he... William Peter Blatty was very impressed by how... What's the term I look for? How stuck in his own ways he was, I guess. He wanted quality, and he wasn't afraid to back down.
Mm-hmm.
So he hunted him down when the production of this movie went into the works. And William Friedkin is another guy altogether. He came off of the French Connection, which is like this really...
Really?
That's the same guy.
The French Connection, that's the guy who
William,
directed this?
William Friedkin. He made The French Connection, he made The Exorcist, and he didn't make a whole lot else after that.
Well, wasn't the French Connection was a big Oscar winner too, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Yeah. Two films back-to-back nominated for Best Picture.
Wow,
what
a guy.
And that's what's impressive. The Exorcist was nominated for Best Picture.
It was, yeah. It's,
yeah.
It's, you know, you can't not mention that.
No, it's interesting. I was thinking about it. The Exorcist, what I find to be really impressive about this movie is that it, at the same time, influenced horror to go in that direction of, like, quality film, quality actors, solid script, like, let's take horror seriously as a genre. But at the same time, the special effects work influenced it, horror to be like, man,
oh, for sure,
let's go fucking gory as shit.
Also, I don't mean to interrupt your train of thought, but I feel like I have to mention that the dog is, like, heaving and snoring and sighing.
Yeah.
And I'm only saying this because I had already prefaced this episode by saying I had allergies and was being a mouth breather. And I just need everyone to know that that's not me. It's not that bad.
Okay, yeah.
I'm sorry, I can't have the entire... This is on public record. I can't have the entirety of the world thinking I'm huffing in the background. I'm not dying. I'm
yeah.
fine.
You're just that unimpressed with these...
I'm just lying here going...
Oh, when is he going to stop talking about directors and writers?
Yeah, so that's not me. That's
I
want to
talk about demons.
I want to talk about demons. And the dog wants to snore.
I'm just going to quickly get through, like, the main cast here, and then we can talk about the movie itself.
While you're doing that, I'll be on Facebook.
Oh, my God. Okay, so obviously the big star of the show here is Linda Blair. In my opinion, one of the greatest performances in a horror movie, period.
I mean, you're not wrong.
It's incredible. It really is. She was kind of an unknown actress at the time. They were having so much trouble trying to find anyone who could play this part.
Can I do a mashup tattoo of Linda Blair and Linda from The Evil Dead?
I thought you were going to say Linda Belcher from Pop.
Oh my god! Wow, okay, thank you for
yeah.
just topping me. I thought I was being clever. Fine. Oh my god.
So
whatever.
The biggest issue with trying to find someone to play Regan McNeil is finding a girl who is of that, 12, 13-year-old age, roughly, I guess?
Sure, yeah.
Who can play the opening of this movie as, I sweet, innocent, naive girl, and then also play the part of this horrific fucking demon.
Yeah, I mean, she did a great job of both parts.
Yes. Also, of course, gotta mention Mercedes McCambridge, who did the voice.
Sure.
That came out of her once she was possessed.
Okay.
They attempted to do the movie with Linda Blair's voice deep in post, and it just sounded really bad, so they had to hire someone else to do it. And hats off to Mercedes McCambridge. She really committed. She literally had this voice acting session where she's chain-smoking cigarettes and chugging whiskey to get her voice harsh enough to get that
pursuit.
Yeah.
Really,
oh yeah. There's a lot of controversy surrounding her as well, because originally she didn't get a screen credit. William Friedkin claims she didn't want one.
Uh-huh.
And yeah.
So that's a whole moment.
There's a whole rabbit hole that you can go down of Mercedes McCambridge versus Friedkin.
Yeah,
and whether or not
like a...
that cost the movie Oscars. It's debated that Linda Blair didn't win the Oscar that year because of that controversy.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I never knew any of this.
Yeah, there's, like, the thing with The Exorcist is, like, we could do an episode on the movie and then a separate episode on everything surrounding it.
So basically, yeah, The Exorcist has Easter eggs, really, I guess. I mean, maybe that's not the word, but there's so much to talk about, just fun stuff around the movie.
Easter egg is an ironic term, considering.
Is Easter eggs the right term? Did I use that incorrectly? Is this calling me out?
No, that's not calling you out. I'm talking about the fact that this is a movie about a demonic possession, and Easter is...
Leave Easter out of the... Fine, I mean...
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And there are...
Yeah, right, because Easter eggs are super, like, Christian and Jesus. Yeah, okay.
I mean, isn't that what the holiday was about?
It's not about the eggs!
Because Jesus died, and then a couple days later, he came back, laid some eggs.
That's definitely what happened. I applaud your religious upbringing.
And turned to chocolate, right?
That's absolutely how it went. I hope you preach a sermon on it.
I
hope you move forward with confidence.
Speaking of preaching...
Preaching.
Max von Sydow plays Father... I can never get his first name. Lancaster? Father Marin. Sure. I'm just going to... I don't have a lot to say here. He's fantastic in the movie. A very memorable performance. The studio wanted Marlon Brando, which...
That would have been awful.
It would have been awful.
That would have been singularly awful.
For a couple of reasons.
I mean, so many. Because
you're not getting peak Marlon Brando. You're getting, like, late stage... kind of an asshole to work with, Marlon Brando.
Yeah, I mean,
he was one of those actors.
Okay, full disclosure, I don't know that much about Marlon Brando. I just don't think it would have worked.
No, the star power alone would have just.
I know. I feel like the star power would have detracted from the movie, in a sense.
And one thing people don't seem to know, I didn't know this until doing the research for this movie. I told you. When Max von Sydow plays this old priest in the movie who's roughly between 70 and 80 years old, he is in his mid-40s.
That was mind-blowing to me.
That, like, yes, the Regan makeup is amazing.
But
the makeup done on Father Marin is incredible.
Well, it's underrated in a big way. A lot of people don't even know. I didn't know that.
You can kind of see it when you watch... I mean, we watched it...
Yeah.
On our 50-inch HD TV, and yeah, you can kind of see it in 2019.
Well, if you're looking for it, I mean, I wouldn't have thought to look for it if you hadn't told me.
If you don't know it, you don't see it.
And see, this is another reason that I think you're right in saying, or maybe I said it, maybe I'm just saying, Charlotte, this is another reason why you're right. That could be what I'm... So, you know, having a big star will kind of detract from this movie, because I feel like... You know, I mean, obviously it wouldn't be Brad Pitt, don't get me wrong, I'm just throwing out an actor's name, but, like, if you throw Brad Pitt in a movie and you age him drastically, I'm still gonna look at it and think, well, that's Brad Pitt, and he's just old.
It
kind of pulls you out of the experience in a way that having lesser-known actors doesn't. I don't care how good of an actor, you have to be exceptional.
Yeah.
You have to be an exceptional actor in order to completely make your audience forget that it's you in a role when they're so familiar with your face.
Absolutely right.
And some actors can do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, granted, I mean, I'm not trying to call out Brad Pitt. I think he's actually a pretty good actor, and I mean, I have definitely watched him in movies where I haven't had at the forefront of my brain, this is Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
But for example, I know Johnny Depp is always a point of contention in everybody's lives somehow. Either you love him or you don't.
Yeah.
We're actually pretty Johnny Depp neutral in this house. We appreciate him, but we don't die for him.
Yeah.
There's a good appreciation. But anyway, I find most roles that Johnny Depp is in, you can't help but think about how it's Johnny Depp.
No, it's true.
And that's not to say he's a bad actor. He's a good actor. It's just, like you said, he kind of repeats characters on times, and he just gets a bit tropey.
I can count on one hand the roles I've seen him in where I kind of forgot.
You forget that it's Johnny Depp, but most of the time you're like, well, this is just Johnny Depp. At this point, I'm convinced he's an evil barber in real life.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think Johnny Depp is actually... he's got to be some kind of weird evil barber pirate in real life.
But it's true, the lesser-known actors add to this movie, and the beans are getting louder.
Beans are getting louder, I'm starting to get alarmed.
That's alright. It's cool, it's ambiance.
Ambiance, that's the worst excuse I've ever heard for poor recording setup, roll with it with confidence.
But every main actor in this movie, actually, I'll say every actor in this movie, is not a star, not a name that you know.
No, they're not. Well, I mean, they are now.
Everyone knows Linda Blair now.
Now, because of The Exorcist.
But you still don't watch this movie and be like, oh, that's Linda Blair.
Look,
I've seen
Linda
her.
Linda Blair.
Because she's known for this movie.
No, exactly. That's a different thing altogether.
Ellen Burstyn plays Regan's mother, Chris McNeil. She's, I guess, technically the main character, the central protagonist of the movie, which I kind of forget when you step away from it.
I mean, yeah, you could argue that, I guess.
She's the central plot line, the one that'll, you know.
No, to me, there's not really a protagonist. To me, it's like the battle of good and evil.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. I mean, if you were...
With good being... Yeah. Good in air quotes being the protagonist.
Studio, again, wanted Audrey Hepburn.
See, I love Audrey Hepburn.
Oh, yeah.
But.
She apparently... there's this infamous quote where Friedkin called her and offered her the part. Even William Friedkin was on board with this. And she's like, yeah, sure, I'd be up for it. If we film it in, I think it's like Morocco.
Oh, that would have been incredible.
And he's like, okay, we're not doing that. So
only, Audrey on a beach.
Yeah.
Are there beaches in Morocco?
I think so.
I'm not good at geography.
I'm not positive.
I want to throw that right out there. And you're not good at geography if I recall what you got in your university geography course.
You don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know anything about that.
That was history, actually.
Was it? What did you get? Remind us all.
I don't know.
Do we
want
to throw it out there?
Nope.
It was an astonishingly bad grade. It was so bad that I would have dropped the course and taken a zero before I had gotten that grade.
You're roasting me here.
Well, I mean, what is marriage if not call out culture
at its
finest?
Wow. Okay.
I'm going to find out that grade and I'm going to disclose it on the internet.
So Audrey Hepburn was out and they also looked at Jane Fonda for the role. So these were the names that were being tossed around. It was that level. They wanted a really well-known name for the part of Chris. And Ellen Burstyn apparently called William Friedkin and said, "This is my role. I want this role. I am this role.
I am."
if
you say anything confidently enough.
Yeah, and it worked. And she's great in the movie. She really is.
Sure.
The last of the main cast is Jason Miller as Father Damien Karras. He got hired because of his writing, which is the weirdest thing. William Friedkin attended a production of a play that Jason Miller wrote in New York City, and afterwards met with him and gave him the novel, The Exorcist, to read. I think it was for writing notes. Like, that was literally the whole point of the exchange was, hey, let me know what you think of this as a writer. And he contacted him after and said, I want to play Karras.
Wow.
He did a little bit of acting. It wasn't completely, it wasn't like I've never acted before, let me be in your movie. But, And
you've gone so far down the IMDb rabbit hole right now.
I just find this whole cast of unknown actors and how they managed to get this together to be really interesting.
It's actually really important. I just want to go on record as saying that while you were talking about all of these actors, I discovered that Claire's now sells Pokemon cards.
Okay, sure. That's completely relevant.
I'm still listening.
And it's worth noting that the studio wanted Jack Nicholson, which would have been a...
Imagine that movie.
Like, I can't.
Imagine that movie. I can't.
Father Karras is so, like, subtle and nuanced, and Jack Nicholson does not have a subtle bone in his fucking body.
Are we going to talk about that that podcast between Stephen King and Eli Roth and...
Oh, the talk about The Shining.
Yeah, and how Stephen King was saying... Did we talk about this in our last episode?
We mentioned a history of horror, but I don't think we mentioned
specifically... Okay, yeah, well, that's a specific little bit about how, you know, the character of Jack Torrance was supposed to start off as a pretty normal guy and sort of descend into madness, and Stephen King was like, yeah, Jack Nicholson walks into that room and he's like, hi, Mr. Allman.
Yeah, completely.
I mean, I can't do a Jack Torrance, but, like, he's unhinged.
He's literally, like, unhinged from scene one.
From the get-go, you're like, well, I'm concerned about him and his family.
Yeah.
You don't think, from the very get-go, you're like, well, he seems villainous. So, yeah, okay, like, let's just picture Jack Nicholson, humor me here, and picture Jack Nicholson in The Exorcist walking in and just acting like, you know, even just, like, putting the Jack Torrance moment on. Walking in to, like, you almost assume that he's in on it. You're like, well, you let the demon in.
Look, I don't think she's the possessed one here.
I don't think we should leave them alone in a room together. No. He's just gonna make it worse. He's gonna spread and cultivate. Like,
oh god,
divide and conquer.
You know what? I'm not saying I wish it happened instead of this, because I think this is a better movie.
No, this is a better movie, but
I would love to have a version of this movie with Marlon Brando, Audrey Hepburn, and Jack Nicholson, and just to watch how batshit that would be.
That would be, like, actually the best thing ever. Yeah. I mean, it would not be, in fact, the best of anything, but it would be incredible.
I feel like if that had happened instead of this, horror would not be what it is.
I think it would have went down to some weird cult classic horror movie, but...
But I just got... Because the influence that and the impact that The Exorcist had on horror as a genre, I gotta wonder where horror would be.
Well, it
would have
been a lot more batshit to answer your question, right?
Yeah, you got that right.
It would have been a lot more of Jack Torrance wheedling into rooms and being weird about shit.
Because, like, let's talk about the movie itself, I think, finally. The thing that you almost forget when watching this movie is that prior to this, the scariest thing audiences had seen was probably Psycho.
I think that's really important to note.
It is.
Because the movie is... Okay, again, you're looking at it in hindsight. We can't really compare it to things that came out recently, but in terms of jump scares and things like that, I mean, I think it is still truly horrific, even in comparison to newer movies, but...
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. I mean, people hadn't seen anything like this on screen. I mean, there was nothing comparable to this.
The biggest horror movies that I can think of prior to The Exorcist are Psycho, Night of the Living Dead, and maybe Rosemary's Baby.
Well, and I mean, are any of those movies, like, really, truly frightening? I mean...
No. Sorry, you gotta mention the universal horror, like Frankenstein and Dracula.
I know, but again...
It's leaps and bounds.
It's leaps and bounds, exactly. It's not... It's comparing apples and oranges at that point.
Yeah, you're going...
Because frankly, like, Wolfman, I mean, you'd be comfortable watching Wolfman with a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
I can tell you immediately that I would not watch The Exorcist with a 10-year-old.
No! You're going from... You're going from the scariest thing that has been seen on screen at this point is maybe the silhouette of someone with a knife through a shower curtain.
Well, exactly.
Jumping to someone's head swiveling 360 degrees.
Yeah.
And
I mean, what year did you say this was?
1973.
73. To be clear, and I just fact-checked this because I don't trust my own facts without Google.
Yeah.
This is what 2019 has brought to us, kids. Anyway. that was before Stephen King even published Carrie.
Yeah.
That was before Stephen King's first novel.
Who's, yes.
Again, like, one of the most renowned, if not the most renowned horror author of all time.
Yeah.
That's not just me being biased. He really
is.
No, I mean, you know,
let's be real
he's
here.
A household name at this point. Yeah. That was before Stephen King even started publishing novels.
Yeah.
And again, Stephen King, like, really broke ground on a lot of what he would put in novels. I mean, again, it's... I'm not saying nobody put anything scary in a novel before Stephen King. I mean, my God.
But it wasn't that widely read.
That's what I mean. Like, it was before horror became a mainstream thing. It was before all of that happened. You're seeing The Exorcist hit the big screens on Boxing Day, no less.
Yeah.
I mean, they really came in with a big, bold splash. I mean, it was gutsy.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was. I mean, you can kind of laugh at that in 2019, but, like, it was.
Well, I mean, there are scenes that today are still kind of shocking.
It is exactly that.
I still am in disbelief when I watch and I see that a possessed 12-year-old is,
we're not even going to go into the gory details of it, but like,
violently masturbating with a crucifix.
It's bad.
Let's be real.
It's bad.
While shouting very obscene.
I know, and some of the things that she says, are horrifying. Like, I would almost wonder if it would even make it into a movie.
I
can't remember a movie that I have seen in recent years that has said anything even close to the things that she said. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely, it's still
especially the fact that it's a kid, right? Like, the fact that it's a depiction of a child saying
played
things.
Played by a pretty young actor.
She
was
right?
older than the character.
She was, but not a
teenager, I guess.
You would still see, I mean, maybe there's something to be said for that. Maybe that's in poor taste. I never really thought of that. Yeah.
But I mean, to get the message across in the movie, it works. It's effective.
It works.
It's questionable, yes.
It's questionable at best.
Yeah.
Oh God! Now I feel like I need to dissect The Exorcist in some kind of feminist theory way. That's a different episode.
Yeah,
that's a different podcast.
There's a
route I could go on that.
There are things to be said.
I have
there.
Moral and ethical things that I would like to make clear about The Exorcist, but I still do love
and
that
I'm almost sure I heard or read somewhere that the point of it being a little girl is because little girls are the picture of innocence and purity.
Well, yeah.
And it's, you know, it's the whole, like, trope notion of
Well, I guess that's why it's a shocking movie.
The corrupted virgin, you know.
Yeah, like, do you think that movie would be nearly as shocking if it was, like, a 30-year-old woman?
No.
No.
Or even a little boy. It wouldn't quite be.
It would still be pretty shocking if it was a little boy.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Any child to me.
Yeah.
Any child, any gender, it will be shocking. I think it's the youthfulness of it that's shocking.
Yeah, the youthfulness.
But,
yeah,
again,
right.
If you put an adult in that movie, I don't think it would have had the impact. Which is not saying it's right, I'm just saying I don't think it would have been as impactful.
No.
I mean, if you look at even movies like The Exorcism of Emily Rose, which was an adult possessed. Don't get me wrong, I really like that movie. But, I mean, I'm not going to compare it to The Exorcist. It certainly didn't go down that route, but again, it's just not as memorable in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I get that.
I mean, the effects might have even been arguably, you know, they probably had more to work with when it came out, but
they had more
to work
with.
The Exorcist did a lot more with a lot less.
But yeah, see, that's one person I forgot to mention. Dick Smith.
Dick Smith.
Dick Smith.
Okay.
That sounds like...
Carry on. I'm just going to leave that as it is. That tells itself.
That sounds like a questionable job title.
At best.
It sounds like... Never mind.
We're going to leave that alone and you're going to keep going.
But Dick Smith, and I guess because...
You do not have my permission to say that name again. Call him Smith.
Mr. Smith.
You wouldn't be repeating that name if it was any other name. You're doing it for fun at this point.
Richard Smith.
Richard Smith.
In fact. I think maybe because of his name, I guess.
We are so immature, it's not even sensible. I don't know who let us have any access to the internet.
Like, there are special effects guys who... Their names are way more well-known than... His.
I bet.
Tom Savini.
Do you think he's working really hard to get his name out there and well known?
I mean, probably, but there's someone who's like, no, don't.
Well, by God, I will be his one-man marketing team because I believe in him.
Yeah. Rick Baker, Rob Bottin, these names, like, horror fans know these names. Dick Smith, not so much.
Not so much.
I said it again.
Sorry.
but he did such good work. Like I mentioned earlier, the Father Mary makeup, the everything that he does. And like, not just the makeup, but the levitation scene. The levitation scene is fantastic.
Yeah, it is.
The way they turned Regan's room into a literal cooler, so just to show how cold it was, and like that breath effect.
I just like having the actors suffer.
Oh, absolutely.
What is it with really, really good movies and you find out after the fact that the actors all suffered?
Oh, they did. Absolutely.
They all suffered.
Everyone suffers for great art, apparently.
And it's honestly, like, I'm not a fan. It makes me sad. And it makes me really sad about all these movies that I love.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, again, we can go into it in Evil Dead, I'm sure. But there's a lot to be said about actors suffering.
Yeah. Evil Dead is a good one for that.
It is. It's a tremendous amount of suffering for my favorite movie ever.
Ellen Burstyn suffered a lifelong back injury from this movie. There's a scene, actually the same crucifix scene we mentioned, when Regan is absolutely losing it and she's possessed and she pushes her mother.
Yes.
And she shrieks in pain, and that is a genuine shriek because
yep.
to this day, Ellen Burstyn has back pain, like,
yeah, I bet,
for her entire life.
Yep.
It's awful.
It is all that's a shame.
It is.
I'm not happy about that.
No. We didn't talk about the crab walk.
Great.
And something that
precursor to The Grudge.
It surprisingly was not in the original cut.
And I don't get that.
Because
why would you put all, because obviously that scene took some amount of work. I mean, they didn't just accidentally do it.
It's amazing to me that it's as well known a scene as it is.
Mm.
Because it's one of those, it's in the list of, like, iconic images in the movie.
For sure.
And it wasn't even in the original cut. It wasn't until the director's cut came out that anyone really saw it.
Wow.
Which is weird, because I feel like it's always been there.
You say it's always been there. As if this movie's not 20 years older than either of us.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, how we haven't, okay, that's another thing I think it's important to note, is really, I mean, we're coming, even though we're saying, you know, we were late to The Exorcist at 20. What? Like, we were more than late. We could only ever have been late.
Yeah.
So everything we could possibly
say. We didn't see this movie until almost 40 years after.
That's what I'm saying. Like, everything we could possibly say about The Exorcist is coming from a context of people who didn't see it until, what, like 2010 or later?
Yeah.
So, there's always going to be that filter, right? I feel like we'll never truly, I mean, we can speculate and we can try and appreciate, but we'll never truly experience, which makes me a little bit sad.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like, and now I feel all sad inside.
I know a lot of, like, that's something I've gotten into on Jedi Dropouts.
Because
mm-hmm. Obviously we talk about a lot of geeky shit. And we've discussed the idea of if you could go back in time.
Yeah, witness something for the first time when the world did.
I know for me it would have to be some kind of movie premiere.
That's, you know what, honestly?
Yeah.
That would be incredible.
Cause like, I
what would you do though? You get out of The Exorcist and you wouldn't even be able to text James about it.
Oh yeah.
What would you do? You'd have to, like, pick up your rotary phone and remember his number for starters.
Yeah, good point. Let's talk about the reactions to this movie when it came out.
Did people vomit?
They did more than vomit.
People passed out.
They did a lot of stuff.
They did.
Like, that's one of the infamous things about this movie is that people reacted so viciously to it.
I want
to
be clear, okay, this is something that I don't know. I mean, again, maybe I'm just being very jaded about horror movies as a horror fan, but, like, and again, we talked about how before this movie came out, it was, you know, it was unprecedented, no one was doing this kind of thing. It was shocking, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But before I watched The Haunting of Hill House, people were saying it was so scary that they were, like, getting sick and had to turn it off. I mean, people are just a little bit, do you think people overreact as well? Because, I mean, this is not the first time. I mean,
overreact?
No, but in the, this aside, within the past, I don't know. I mean, again, I don't really have context for the dates. I feel like it wasn't that long ago. What was it was screening at a film festival and people were, like, fainting and passing out and couldn't watch it? That wasn't that long ago. What movie would that have been?
Sounds like Hereditary.
Maybe? I really don't know. We should look into that, but it wasn't that long ago.
No, yeah, like,
and people are saying they passed out and vomited and just got sick, and I'm, you know, don't get me wrong, these movies are scary, but my God.
Okay, here's a list of documented,
I want to hear it, go,
okay, this
give me
is,
a list.
And, like, this sounds like urban legend, but these are all actually documented reactions to the watching this movie when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
People vomited so much that they had to have extra cleaning crew at most movie theaters to
see,
clean
that's
up
not
the
sensible.
Amount of vomit on the floor. People fainted constantly. At least one woman went into early labor because she was pregnant at this movie. And, of course, most notably, someone, after watching this, climbed to the top of a building and set themselves on fire.
What?
somebody watched the movie and set themselves on fire. That happened.
I mean, you kind of felt like doing that after you watched 50 Shades of Grey.
For a different reason, yeah. Yeah. No, I didn't feel like setting myself on fire. I felt like setting that movie on fire.
By the way, I found what I was looking for, Gerald's Game.
Really?
Gerald's Game. People said, and I guess this wasn't a film festival, don't pay any attention to me.
Okay.
Yeah, people apparently reportedly passing out after watching, quote, this scene, which we all know is the hand degloving.
Yeah.
In Gerald's Game. Now, I'm sorry, if you pass out watching a hand degloving in a horror movie, I mean, I don't know why you came here in the first place. Go home.
Like, granted,
I'm not trying to be mean. I'm really not trying to be mean, but what do you expect?
As a horror fan, I will say that was one of the hardest to watch scenes I've seen in a horror movie in a long time.
Of course, but you still know it's just, you're like,
yeah, it's like too many people go into this with the, like, they get so sucked in that they think what they're watching is real.
They do. And, like, I feel like horror is not for you. And again, I feel like I'm being callous and mean, but, like, why are you here? You're obviously suffering.
Just watch thrillers.
You can't be enjoying this. If you're watching The Exorcist in a movie and you're getting to the point where you're literally throwing up, just go home. Kick your feet up. Like, watch, like, MASH. I don't know. I'm not judging you. I'm just saying you can't be having a good time. Take care of yourself.
Yes.
Get a cold cloth. Go do something you like doing. I mean, anything at all. Anything but be here. I just, I just feel like I don't know why you put yourself through that amount of suffering.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, what, you lit yourself on fire after, why did you watch?
I gotta think there were pre-existing issues there.
I mean, my God. I mean, my reaction to not liking a movie would be like myself on
fire. Apparently, like there was a strong, a sense, apparently, that the movie itself
brought the devil.
Yes. In fact, to the point where
then go to church.
Billy Graham, is that his name?
Billy Graham.
He delivered sermons about the evil of this movie.
Why haven't I listened to those sermons?
I don't know.
That sounds like a treat.
Yeah, it does, actually.
I mean, honest to God. But, like, and that's I guess that's my point, is if you firmly believe that the devil's coming out of the screen at you, then just go to church.
But my God.
Go to where the devil isn't.
That's some amazing free marketing, right?
Oh God, yes. By God. I mean, how many sermons did Billy Graham deliver to, like, really devout parents whose children then were like, man, I gotta see this. I gotta rebel against mom and dad right away.
Yeah. And I feel like that was the thing. Like, it had that reputation of everybody was talking about it. Everybody was going to see this movie.
Absolutely.
I feel like the only two horror movies that I can think of have had that effect to the point of, like, it scared the world and everyone had to watch it. And in my opinion, that is The Exorcist and The Blair Witch Project.
I was really hoping you were going to say Paranormal Activity.
Really?
No, I think no, by the world, I mean, like, one wing of the Grenfell Dormitory.
Okay, okay. You're going specific
one,
here.
Yeah, one wing of my university experience we were all alarmed, and I mean, we didn't do ourselves any favors because we're literally, like, on an all-girls floor and everyone was scared to death of Paranormal Activity. I'm like, wow, step forward for brave women. I mean, personally, I never found it that frightening.
Way to defy gender stereotypes.
Oh, yeah, we did just an exceptional job. I mean, by God. But, yeah, no, I mean, everyone was scared. But I, for some reason, it was this weird perception that it was, quote-unquote, real, like sort of a Blair Witch Project thing.
Yeah.
Which you don't get, because I don't recall Paranormal Activity claiming that at any point.
Well, it didn't do this, not in the same way.
Yeah.
Cause,
but they did have, like, actors using their real names and stuff, didn't they?
They did. They did that, and they casted pretty unknown actors.
They did.
But
I want to watch Paranormal Activity again.
But, like, Blair Witch went a step further.
Yeah.
Where they were like,
no, yeah, I mean,
these
they
people
did,
really died.
They did the viral marketing.
Like, it completely ruined the careers of the actors because they were, like, attempting to make careers and they were not allowed to even give interviews saying that, no, I'm alive.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. But that's episodes we're definitely going to get into.
That's a different episode.
Both of those we're going to cover.
Yeah, we should. Well, maybe even a two-parter on Paranormal Activity. Maybe we could break it up a little bit.
Yeah, cover some of the sequels.
The only one I didn't really like that much was The Ghost Dimension.
Yeah.
But you know what? Love Paranormal Activity. I think it's right on.
Yep, I agree.
Which is the most, like, weirdly Newfie thing I will ever say.
Personally, the third one. I love the third one.
Is that the one with the sheet and the ghost in the middle of the kitchen?
Yeah, that
was a great, really great.
Toby.
It was fun! Paranormal Activity is just fun.
Anyway.
Moving on.
One other thing that I realized this film is probably the first to do. I could be wrong. I'm not positive.
Tell me more.
The subliminal messaging. The way they...
Oh, you mean the weird flashes of the creepy face?
Yes.
That's my favorite thing in the entire world.
The way they just took that Pazuzu face, which was the original test makeup for Regan that did not work. And they were like, let's just use that as this
just
creepy demon face. Yeah.
On the range
which,
of the oven. It's incredible. I love that.
And just that random, like, quick frame of it in the hospital scene.
I'm
right?
obsessed with that, and I wish more movies would do exactly that.
And I guess if you think about it, let's just say it's 1973. Mm-hmm. The scariest thing you've ever watched was Alfred Hitchcock, which, again, does not even show...
Dial M for murder.
Yeah. And you're watching this movie, and all of a sudden, this creepy face just...
Yeah, I mean, that's great. It's incredible.
In your mindset, in the movie you're watching, would you think, wow, they just scared me with this movie, or holy shit, what was that?
Well, that's exactly, you know what, you're exactly right when you say that, because really, again, like you said, what movie up to this point was doing that?
Yeah.
I mean, we could laugh all we want about that not being much of a jump scare in 2019, but like, I mean, that was an early jump scare. I mean, that was...
And we know so much more about the movies that are being made.
And how they're being made.
Exactly.
How those effects are done.
At that time, I mean, I it's not shocking to think that people thought that was an actual demon.
I know, and you know what? It's a sin when you say it, because, I mean, I guess I've just mocked a bunch of people for throwing up. But, you know, if you really try to get in the headspace of someone in 1972 seeing, you know, maybe this is one of the first horror movies they ever watched, for all we know.
They probably went into this...
That's pretty scary!
Yeah, and, like...
They weren't expecting this. I mean, in their defense, when I say, why were you here? They were there because I don't think they were really fully expecting what they got.
No.
I think it was a lot more than they bargained for, not how they meant to spend their, like...
No.
I don't even have a ballpark for how much a movie cost in 1972.
I was about to say
nickels and dimes, and I thought that was rude.
How much did this movie cost to make?
No, how much did it cost to get a movie ticket in 1972?
Oh, God. I have no idea.
I have no idea, but, like, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
like, people,
yeah,
I don't
yeah.
think it was what people were expecting, and again...
No, absolutely not.
We're also taking for granted the access to information, which, again, I'm not trying to say people in 1972 weren't educated or weren't intelligent,
no.
but, like, did your average person in 1972 know an extreme...
The world is so much more connected.
That's it, right? And, like, you know, again, it's hard to put yourself in that mind frame, but in 1972, how familiar was the average person with, like, video editing
yeah.
and special effects and things like
and
that?
Even the opening sequence of that movie in Iraq.
Yeah.
Is it Iraq? I could be wrong about that. One second, I'm gonna check my notes. Yeah, it's Iraq. Okay. How many people watching that movie had never actually seen video of Iraq?
Well, and this is it, right?
Like,
I mean,
and it's so, like, I know it's just a simple, like, it's an old guy, he's digging up some stuff, he sees a statue, but it's so ominous. It's so, like, it's got this, like, sense of dread.
Absolutely.
That just washes over everything, and it sets the whole movie up.
It does, and again, it's, I'm just doing some quick fact-checking here. Think about the prevalence of even cable TV leading up to the 70s. I mean, there are probably a lot of homes that probably didn't even have access to cable TV. I mean, I'm not saying nobody did, of course, but, you know, I don't think it was, the way it is now. I mean, everybody has, like, you know, 4K smart TV you can get for, like, $200.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not really a hot commodity anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone has a TV, and I think we take that for granted. That access to information, the access to the internet, the access to media, our overexposure to media. I mean, it's why the bar is so high
now for horror movies.
We are
connected to the media.
Well, not only are we connected, we're utterly desensitized.
Yeah, we are.
I mean, like, I'm literally at the point, like, we watch things like, what have we watched? We watched Green Inferno, was that?
Yeah.
So we watched the Green Inferno, which is very gory. I mean, any Eli Roth, really. Let's talk about Hostel, the Green Inferno, stuff like that. I mean, I can watch that movie and eat a snack. It doesn't even, like, phase me at all. I'm literally watching someone get lopped into little bits.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's just a movie. And I'm, like, shoveling back popcorn, and it's not even a thing. But again, put yourself in 1972 when you, maybe you don't even have cable TV, and your expectation of a scary movie is Psycho at best.
Okay, you know what? Let's take it a step further. Let's say that it's maybe Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
It's still not comparable.
Not even close. I feel like we keep going back to this. Just, you know, I guess I'm just trying to get in that headspace, but yeah. I can't help it. I guess it's kind of mind-boggling. I mean, it's impossible to, you know, even in this day and age, if The Exorcist had to come out in this day and age, would it matter? Not to be rude. No. I don't mean that in...
You have a point.
Would it be impactful? I feel like it wouldn't.
You're absolutely right.
And that's another thing I think it's important to consider. I mean, in talking about The Exorcist and how impactful it was,
yeah.
It's kind of a shame when you think about how desensitized we are to horror. And this episode has deteriorated from The Exorcist to desensitization in horror.
Yeah.
I made it a little bit academic by accident, but
no,
it's kind of a shame when you think about it, because think of how many really great horror novels are out there that could be adapted, and could be adapted incredibly, and they're gonna fall flat in 2019 because they just don't hit home on the audiences in the same way.
Yeah. No, you're...
I think I made a point. Ding, 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 ding.
Okay, let's end it.
I get a cookie, gold star, everything's over, nothing else matters. That was the pen. Nothing else you say is gonna be as important as that was.
So, I think the one last thing that needs to be talked about.
Yeah.
We're talking about not just the movie, but everything surrounding the movie.
Of course.
Let's talk about that Exorcist curse.
This friggin' Macbeth.
Yeah. this movie has a lot of suspicious situations.
I want to see the cast of a stage production of Macbeth put off The Exorcist and just see how many random floorboards fall out from under them.
The original set that they built, which was... So the house that the movie's filmed in, the exterior is actually a townhouse in wherever, I forget where.
I hope it's an Airbnb.
Right now?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if it's still standing or not.
Oh, well.
I hope so.
There go all my dreams. I'll just have to settle for that Airbnb that's a potato.
So they rebuilt the entire house for their... What did you just...
I was really hoping you weren't just going to let that go. I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to get that Airbnb that's a potato, and without skipping a beat, you just go into the next tag.
You know...
Haven't you seen that Airbnb that's a potato?
No.
Okay, well, I'll get there. That's not relevant right now.
Okay.
My two dream Airbnbs are Bam Margera's house, just because it's sad, and the potato.
Bam Margera's house, like, from
Castle Bam.
It's an Airbnb?
Did we not talk about this?
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, his mother, April Margera, literally redecorated. I mean, it's not Castle Bam anymore.
Yeah.
It's the same building, though.
It would be more fun if it was the skate park version.
Well, that's what I said. I was
yeah.
like, why would you do that? Your primary market is people trying to relive their 15-year-old
yeah.
lives. I mean, anyway.
Yeah.
The potato.
Okay, so the townhouse.
Potato.
That was an actual townhouse.
Potato.
They rebuilt the house as a set to use for the movie.
Of course they did.
It burnt down.
Of course it did.
Very, very early on, they completely rebuilt it.
Uh-huh.
A bunch of people related to the movie, I think like 6 total cast and crew members died during the making of the movie.
Yep.
Including Jack...
Not Linda Blair.
No, not... She's still alive.
She's going strong.
Jack McGowan, who played Burke Dennings, the eccentric director guy.
Of course.
And... That Vasiliki, I don't know.
Okay, you're embarrassing yourself.
I don't know her name.
Move on.
The old lady who played Father Karras's mother.
Yes.
They both died before the movie was even released.
Rough.
Linda Blair's grandfather died. Max von Sydow's brother died. They all during the filming of this movie. Jason Miller's like 8-year-old.
So the next question we have is someone who worked on this movie a serial killer or arsonist?
Actually, yes.
What? Yes! Oh my god, you told me. I'm
okay.
Sorry, I just shrieked.
So,
I was like, oh my god, it
yes.
all fits!
So there is a legitimate serial killer in the movie.
There is, yeah, actually.
In the hospital scenes, when Regan is being tested, you can look it up online. There's this kind of, like, when you notice him, he's a little off-looking guy who's just one of the assistants. This guy's name was Paul Bateson, and he was convicted of manslaughter. He later claimed he killed like 7 or 8 men.
Okay, but did he have anything to do with the other deaths? Or were they completely
not unrelated? Not that we know of.
It's never how they all died, so I'm just kind of throwing it out there.
I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe it was a heart attack. Maybe he caught it.
I don't really know exactly how they all died.
I don't know either.
Mercedes McCambridge, the voice of the demon, years after the movie, her son, this is really sad. I'm sorry to get dark here. Her son killed his wife, two children, and himself.
That's horrible.
Killed his entire family.
Did that happen to a wrestler?
Was
your son a wrestler?
No. Her son was not Chris Benoit.
Okay.
That's a dark joke.
I wasn't joking! I know. That wasn't me joking! I was literally just asking. I mean, I'd like to think there are multiplicities of cases where men kill themselves and their families.
No.
That was me being optimistic, not joking.
Unfortunately not.
Okay, no. Thank you for just making me sound horrible.
No, you're not the horrible one. You didn't kill your
entire
family.
You're right, I didn't kill my wife and my family, but, like...
So, there's a lot of weird shit that happened around this movie. I don't have anything else listed, but, like, there were constant just, like, electrical issues everywhere they went, and just stuff that stopped working, and it's just one of those movies that, like... you know, it's questionable.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot more going on around it than most.
Fair.
And given the topic of the movie,
of course,
you know where this goes,
maybe
right?
Maybe people are just reading into it. Maybe every movie has just a lot of nonsense and people just read into it more.
It's not Poltergeist weird. Because that whole franchise is fucked. Like,
it's just fraught with misfortune.
Like, if I was offered the job to remake Poltergeist, I would say no.
See, the thing about Poltergeist is we ought to do a Poltergeist episode, but you'd have to make me care about Poltergeist first.
Oh.
Is that a low blow?
I mean, it's got a fan base.
I don't dislike Poltergeist. It's just, you know what? If we're going to talk about old horror movies and, you know, all these cult classics, and you know what? It's pretty low tier for me.
Okay.
Poltergeist is probably, and again, it's not to say I don't care about it. I certainly do like that movie, but I mean, if you're gonna compare it to anything else,
but you're not, you're also not a Spielberg fan.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, that's.
And I think we should go out on a limb and put that in the disclaimer of every episode
that you don't really like Spielberg.
Yeah, I want that to be part of my bio. I'm gonna put that on my Instagram bio.
Charlotte Taylor, fuck Spielberg.
I never said that. I never got rude about it. Just.
Yeah.
I don't appreciate your artwork. I think you should retire. Was that rude? I might have been ruder.
Well,
oh my god, his movies are just not great. Wow, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole of negativity right now.
Well, I like him.
Yeah, well, I'm not going down that rabbit hole either.
Well, to cap this off here, The Exorcist was made on a $12 million budget.
Not by Steven Spielberg.
Not by Steven Spielberg. It grossed $441 million.
Of course it did.
It was the highest grossing R-rated film of all time at the release.
And it's still grossing people out today.
Hey!
Finger guns.
it's still 10th. If you go for adjusted...
You're saying it's the 10th grossest movie?
The 10th highest rated... The 10th highest grossing R-rated film
of all
time. The 10th
most grossing movie.
And if you adjust for inflation, it is still first.
Really?
Yeah.
Compared to Gone with the Wind?
For R-rated.
Oh.
Gone with the Wind, yeah.
I didn't hear you say R-rated.
That old Southern romance with...
You know, it should be R-rated. Like, if you just look at the horrible slavery, it probably should be R-rated. I'm ashamed of how many times I've watched that movie. I'm not proud of myself. I can't. I'm upset about it. Wow. You see this horrible white guilt coming out of me now that I watched Gone with the Wind once. Where was I going with that? I didn't hear you say R-rated. I want to be clear.
Okay.
I thought you said highest grossing movies of all time, and I always thought Gone with the Wind was way up there with inflation.
Actually, at one point, this was the 4th highest grossing film of all
time. Oh, that's fair. It's just, again, it's funny now that you say Gone with the Wind is an R-rated movie.
Yeah.
Imagine Gone with the Wind is an R-rated movie. If you took out We should update that movie.
Tarantino should remake Gone with the Wind.
Yes, but you know he wouldn't do a good job with slavery. Nope. He would just make that worse.
Nope, that's a touchy
subject. He would just make that worse.
The Exorcist is still...
You know the best part of Quentin Tarantino is?
What?
He would think he was making it better.
Yeah.
He's a white savior at best.
Yep. It is still...
Like, I'm going to offend Tarantino. Like, Tarantino can be offended.
Yeah, good
point. He has, like, plexiglass skin. He can't feel.
No, you're right.
I know I'm right. I wouldn't, like... I could literally say these words to his face, and he'd be like, well, yeah, feet.
He wouldn't be offended, but he would spend an hour telling you why you were wrong.
Well, that's fine. Yeah. I mean, whatever.
It is still the 9th all-time adjusted highest-grossing film.
Okay, can you tell me where Gone with the Wind is on there?
Adjusted?
Yes.
Probably 1.
Oh, I thought you were looking at a list.
No, I have notes here.
Oh, sorry. I think we're on Wikipedia.
I didn't write down where Gone with the Wind was.
I can't believe you didn't make notes about Gone with the Wind comparatively to The Exorcist in your notes for this episode. Do better.
Do better.
I'll
do better on the next one.
You know what I want? I want at the end of every episode you to tack on some weird comparative fact about Gone with the Wind.
Okay.
Done.
Okay. The film was nominated for 10 Oscars. It won 2 of them for Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Sound Mixing. It was nominated for 7 Golden Globes. It won 4 of those.
I don't even know what a Golden Globe is. Is that bad?
It's like a lesser Oscar.
A lesser Oscar.
It's like
an Emmy.
It's like a no-name brand Oscar.
A no-name brand. The one you get at No Frills.
President's Choice President Oscar.
Compliments Oscar. Great value Oscar.
In 2010, the Library of Congress selected The Exorcist to be preserved as part of its National Film Registry for culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant.
I think it was aesthetically significant.
Oh, yeah. You sound like you're about to make a joke. But...
I thought about it, but I'm not quick enough on my feet.
Okay. That's all I have to say about The Exorcist. I love this movie.
I feel like I have more to say about Gone with the Wind and Steven Spielberg than I did The Exorcist, but thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for joining.
Thank you for inviting me to the podcast that I co-host. Thank you for letting me be a part of this.
Yeah. You letting you sit in on it.
I feel like we're Garfield and Odie, and I am Odie. You're an enthusiastic Garfield, and I am an unprepared Odie.
I think I'm too enthusiastic to be Garfield.
You probably are. Maybe you're John.
I think this is reversed.
Maybe. Yeah, that makes more sense. I'm not very good at comparisons today.
I'm just here, like, being super enthusiastic, and you're like, lasagna.
Mondays. It is a Monday, and I would love to have lasagna.
You know what? To bring it back to the Golden Globes and the Oscars, Golden Globes are to Oscars... what Heathcliff is to Garfield.
Okay, Heathcliff, for starters, is high-quality, top-tier material.
Is he, though?
Yeah, did you read Heathcliff?
A little bit.
A little bit doesn't count, my friend.
It's a little weak.
It's not weak! You watch wrestling. Whatever. I don't care about anything you say about anything.
I'm glad we covered The Exorcist.
I'm glad we covered Steven Spielberg, Heathcliff, and Gone with the Wind. Happy that those topics came up in conversation. I had something else to say about this.
Make sure to tune into our, Texas Chainsaw.
Did you know
Massacre.
Jim Davis had a cameo in The Exorcist?
That's not true.
That's true.
It's not true.
It's absolutely true.
You're
Google
making
it.
This up.
You're making this up off the
top of your head. I'm not Googling that.
Well, maybe our viewers will Google it and prove you wrong.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't exist, that's just how good his cameo was. It was unreported.
Unreported?
I'm the only one who knows about it. I'm Jim Davis's friend.
How are you?
Somehow.
Okay. Make sure you tune into our next episode for all this great content. All these absolutely true facts about Jim Davis.
That great content comment was loaded.
Yeah. But in all seriousness, thank you very much for listening, not just this episode, but the first episode that we released a couple weeks ago. We got some great feedback on it. And
did we?
We had at least one.
Oh my gosh.
At least one nice comment.
Oh wow, clap, clap, clap.
And maybe, if we work real hard, we'll get a second comment.
I would love to get a second comment from our one listener who says, you guys did pretty good.
That was not terrible.
That was not the worst thing I've heard.
As always, you can listen to other episodes of Keep It Creepy, Jedi Dropouts, Final Form, all that stuff over at www.jedidropouts.podbean.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can tune in for Jim Davis facts and boiling beans in the background, all kinds of wonderful, completely irrelevant stuff.
That's just how we keep it creepy.
Yeah, and I guess keep on creeping on.
Hey.
Later.